Hello and welcome to A Hurler's Life with me, Brian Carroll. In this podcast, we chat with former greats of the game about their hurling lives. From the best manager they played under, to the one win that means the most to them. In every show, the guests will reveal the best six they ever hurled with. One of the best cornerbacks Galway ever produced joins me this week. Ollie Canning produced many brilliant performances in the Maroon of Galway, winning 4 All-Stars and 4 National Hurling Leagues throughout a 14-year career. With his club Portumna, he won 6 county titles and 4 All-Irelands with a star-studded team. He was quick, skillful and a brilliant reader of the game and left many a corner forward frustrated. This is A Hurler's Life with Ollie Canning. A Hurler's Life is proudly sponsored by Golan Bake. Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in the supermarket freezer aisle to bake at home. Their range includes the nation's favourite, the ham and cheese jambon, as well as their new pepperoni pizza jambon and chicken fajita jambon flavours. Hurling and jambons, only in Ireland. Okay, Ollie, you're very welcome to the show. Great to have another Galway man. And I'm obviously delighted to have you on it. You're one of the best cornerbacks we've ever seen in the noughties, I have to say. I didn't like going near you, so I tried to avoid you at all costs. But you won 4 All-Stars.
I avoid you as well, Brian.
You won 4 All-Stars during that time. But maybe the younger generation don't realise, you actually started out in the forwards. You know, your early part of your career with Galway was actually half forward or corner forward.
Yeah, it was, Brian. I suppose when I broke onto the Portumna senior team, way back in 93, I was playing in the forwards with Portumna. And then when I made the breakthrough into the Galway senior panel, it would have been a forward that I would have come in with, even though I had played, you know, minor cornerback. So that's where I started, yeah. So I played a couple of seasons up front with Galway and enjoyed it up there. But playing in the forwards is not that easy, as you know yourself.
Look, I suppose a lot of people, if they do remember one thing about you playing the forwards, and sorry that I'm bringing this up, but it's an All-Ireland quarter-final, like Ollie Canning bearing down on the goal against Clare and David Fitz in the goal, and you rattled the crossbar.
Yeah, that was a tough day. I mean, I got a great pass from, I think it was Joe Rabbit, and I remember thinking going in along, just taking off the steps, and I did take, you know, I took my time. I wasn't at all panicked. And I felt, yeah, coming up to striking the ball, I had done everything right. You know, I hit it probably perfectly. Only it came back off the crossbar. Probably should have hit it into the ground. I remember Davey Fitz after the game, you know, saying he got a touch. I don't think he got a touch myself, but yeah, rattled the crossbar that day, Brian, and Clare mounted a great comeback. And I think they got 2 or 3 goals in the second half of that game and came back to draw the match, and they beat us in the replay. So that was one of my memories for sure in the Galway forward line. But look, you live and learn. It was a tough day hitting the crossbar, but you have to move on from them things, I suppose.
I'd say the boys, just to give you a bit of slagging about that, did it bother you?
Not, right. Maybe down training, the boys used to say to me, all right, we used to have a crossbar challenge, you know, a training, you get maybe 10 minutes just messing around. And the boys would always say, go on, Canning, you'll definitely be able to do this anyway. So there was a bit of a joke, all right, but not too many people have said it to my face. But look, these things happen, and that's the way it goes. You don't take them things too seriously. I have great, when I see people now, forwards going through and maybe having a close shave or missing a goal chance, I actually do have good sympathy for them because I know what it's like.
Mostly we hear of maybe when players transition from one end to the other, it's usually, you know, a back going up to the forwards. But you obviously did it the other way around. Which did you prefer hurling in?
I think, Brian, it was Matty Murphy that moved me back in the senior panel. Matty was my manager at minor level, and I had gone from kind of midfield half back line back into the corner for the minors in 1994. So Matty had probably seen me in playing in the full back line with the minors. So I went back with the seniors. I probably found the defending easier. I think, Brian, when you're under pressure and you get a ball, you do have the advantage playing in the backs to just, you know, launch one into the forwards. You're not overly concerned maybe at times of where it goes to. I feel in the forwards, you're always under pressure. And we've always seen it down through the years, be it club or county, and the corner forward gets the curly finger, and you know, you're looking at it going, well, you know, to be fair to him, he hasn't got any ball. So definitely the backs, I found it easier. Just for a simple reason is, even if you get the ball, win the ball in the forwards, you're under pressure. You have to do something with it. You have to get a free. You have to get a score, or set somebody else up. So there's always pressure in the forwards, and I probably found the backs easier from that point of view.
What I noticed any time I marked you and watching you was you tried to hurl from the front.
Yeah, I think I was never afraid to attack the ball. And I think coming up to games, Brian, I think most hurlers would feel this. If you've got the work done and you've got the ball control done, and you're fit, and I suppose, you know, I always had confidence in my own ability once I had the work put in. It's like anything else. You see some players maybe pick up knocks, their confidence might drop because they're carrying something. But I was very lucky during my career. I don't think I only missed one game ever with Galway through injury, and I was very, very lucky. But I always found as well, Brian, you know, I did have, you know, probably enough pace to recover if I made a mistake. So my pace got me out of trouble sometimes when my ball control would let me down. And, you know, it was just the way I played. I wasn't the biggest guy on the field, so standing behind players maybe wasn't going to be the best option for me at times. So I was never afraid to attack the ball. And once I kept it coming out the field, I was happy enough, even if you didn't get the control the first time around.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's funny, I always say that the cornerbacks, sometimes you just, you know, if a ball's coming in, as you say, you just need to get it out of your area sometimes, however that is.
Sometimes. And I mean, as I often said to younger players, if I was coaching them, you know, if you're a cornerback and you're coming out trying to control the ball, just make sure it goes in the direction you're going. If it goes inside you, you're in trouble. But just make sure, even if you don't get in your hand first time. You know, I always worked hard at that, Brian, as well. Like, I mean, I remember lots of times after training, you know, the guys, and I remember staying back with Damien Joyce, you know, in the latter years there, you know, doing extra work on ball control, literally just belting the ball in at each other in the corners and taking turns. So lots of work went into that. And I think that gave me confidence as well. When you were doing the work behind the scenes, you know, you were never too worried about it.
Invariably, you were made to mark, say, the marquee forward in their team. You're thinking Charlie Carter in your first game back at cornerback. You're talking Owen Kelly, Andrew O'Shaughnessy, or whoever it needed to be. That took some preen confidence on your behalf.
It was always a great challenge, Brian. And I suppose, you know, I used to love seeing, you know, corner forwards coming into the game, maybe scoring, you know, 6 points or 5 points from play or something like that in the previous couple of games. And that really motivated me because, you know, I still believe, you know, hurling at its core is still a battle between two guys on the field, and you know, whoever's going to come out on top. Generally, if most of your team does well in that department, you win the game. So for me, it was always a great challenge to match up against these good players. I really loved that, and it really did motivate me. If I could see, you know, you'd be seeing in the paper such a guy has scored, you know, 8 or 10 points from play in the previous 2 or 3 games. But then for me, there was an X on his back, and he was a guy I was going to try and, you know, keep out of the game. And sometimes it was just, you know, get the ball away from him. If you can clear a ball, a few balls, great. But number one priority was stopping that guy having an influence on the game. And I used to love that challenge.
With Galway, you've probably saw both sides of the coin where, you know, you used to enter the All-Ireland series at the quarter-final stage, and then in the latter years, obviously, he came into Leinster. You know, what was it like in those early years, you know, knowing it was straight knockout?
It was tough. Like, I came on the senior panel in 1995, and I think Clare beat us in the semi-final that year. I was a sub, I was on the bench. And like in 1996 against Wexford, I actually came on for a few minutes against Wexford that day. And Wexford beat us in the semi-final that year, and Clare had gone on to win the All-Ireland the year before, and Wexford won the All-Ireland in 96. So I suppose from Galway's point of view, you know, the games were close enough, and we always felt if you could get over the semi-final, you know, you had a decent chance. I definitely think, you know, bringing Galway into Leinster was good for Galway. I think it was good for Leinster. I think it just kind of balanced the books a little bit from Galway's point of view, that at least they were coming in the same time as the other teams. They weren't coming in cold into a semi-final. Now, when you won the semi-final and maybe won in All-Ireland, people maybe looked at that as an advantage to Galway only having two games. But for me, I think long-term, it wasn't doing anything for Galway. And I think the decision to go into Leinster was a good decision in the end, because it just meant that Galway were starting the same time as all the other teams. You were coming in on a level playing field, as we say. And I think it's worked well since, to be honest.
Do you think there was a correlation between the fact that, you know, you were able to win National Hurling Leagues, like you won four, probably because you were playing more games, playing more regularly, and you were at performances back to back, whereas obviously in that championship, you were coming in cold?
Yeah, I think so. And look, at, I mean, back when we used to come in at semi-final stage, you could see maybe, you know, certain players, their Galway careers might have only been, you know, 7 or 8 games or 9 games with Galway over a couple of years. And it really wasn't enough to develop any players. It wasn't enough for maybe young players coming through. And it's great now that you see some of the Galway players currently, you know, having 40, 50 appearances with Galway, you know, over a number of years. And that's really where you learn your craft. That's really where you can build a team. And for me, when we were coming in at semi-final stage, you know, we had guys back in 87 and 88 who won a couple of All-Irelands, but might have only played with Galway, you know, 12 or 14 times over their career. So this way, I think, is better. I think it's better for developing players, and I think it's better for the hurling championship as a whole.
In terms of Galway winning those National Hurling Leagues, but not actually transferring that to winning All-Irelands, you know, you unfortunately, you played in 2 All-Irelands and you lost both of them. You know, that tag of not being able to do it in the championship, did that hang over those Galway teams?
I think it did. I mean, coming through your whole career and not winning an All-Ireland, Brian, you would have to say, you know, there was something missing with us. I won 4 leagues, but the first one I won was in 1996 and the last one I won was in 2010. So that's over a lot of years. It wasn't like we had, you know, we won 4 leagues back to back and we couldn't produce it in the championship. So like my league medals were won with probably 3 or 4 different teams, so to speak. So was it a disappointment? Yeah, I suppose it was that we couldn't produce it and we couldn't get over the line on the big stage in Croke Park in the championship. But look, sometimes you look back and you have to ask yourself the hard question, were we good enough to win them matches? You know, I firmly believe, you know, that teams, you know, win the games when they're good enough, when you have the quality of players. And sometimes you have to put your hand up and say, no, we just weren't good enough on the day. You know, you look back on 2001 against Tipperary, I feel maybe we conceded a couple of soft goals that day. But Tipperary did enough to win the game. We were 1 point down, I think, with 9 or 10 minutes to go. And Tipperary, they won by 3 that day. So that was a disappointing day for us. But I still believe if we were good enough, we'd have done it, Brian. And maybe we were just short a couple of players.
You hurled with Galway until 2010. You know, you were 34 at that stage.
I know training and stuff like that was getting harder. The young lads were getting stronger. They were getting faster. And 2010 was it for me then. I just knew I had to go at that stage because I was going to get caught. I was getting, you know, there were certain times in games you were just hanging on by the skin of your teeth. And I knew the day was coming and I didn't want to be the guy there that was going to let Galway down someday and you know, concede a couple of goals and be the cause of losing a big game.
Was it hard to leave though?
No, it wasn't, Brian. I think in 2010, you know, my race was run. When you're training with these young lads that are coming through and you're well into your 30s, you're 33, 34, and you're training against guys of 21 or 22, and you know, you're doing these, you know, 100 meters, 150 meter sprints in Athenry, and you know, you're in a group of 5, and you know, for most of your career, you'd be in the top 1 or 2, and then you're in the bottom 1 or 2 in a group of 5 or 6 players. Well, then you know, you're starting to slip, and I probably saw that coming during the year, and I probably, you know, subconsciously was at peace that if I got through that year, that was it for me, because there was no way I could have gone into 2011 and do what I was doing to myself, you know, trying to get in shape, you know, 34, going on 35, would have been 35 that following year. And that was just an impossibility for me, because I just felt my body had was telling me, my brain had never slowed down as regards what I wanted to do, Brian, on the field, as regards, you know, get the touch in, get the flick in, seeing somebody to give the pass to, you know, maybe even before you had the ball controlled. That never slowed down for me. But definitely getting the flick in, you know, I was that split second slow, that split second behind. And for me, 2010, it was an easy decision for me.
Did you miss the game?
I think I had the advantage of going back to, you know, play with Portumna. We were still, you know, pretty competitive. We came back in 13 and won a county final with Portumna. So that transition for me was made easier by going back in and playing with Portumna and being competitive with Portumna. And for us to come back in 13 and win that county final and win the All-Ireland in March 2014 in Croke Park, it was really, you know, something we probably didn't think we had in us as the Portumna team. So for me, you know, retiring from Galway, going back into a, you know, still a pretty strong, you know, club team, that made the transition very easy for me, and I just got stuck back in with Portumna.
And obviously, one of the most successful club teams of all time, you know, you won 6 county titles and 4 All-Irelands, and that brings us probably some of the better days that you had. You might tell us which is the one win in your hurling career that mean the most to you.
I was thinking about this, Brian. I think 2003, the county final win with Portumna, that was our breakthrough. That was our first ever senior championship in Portumna ever in our history. And in the previous probably, you know, 9 or 10 years, I think Sarsfields and Athenry had pretty much, you know, won all the county championships in the previous 10 or 12 years. I think Clarenbridge won one in 2001. But outside of that, it was definitely Sarsfields and Athenry that were dominating the club scene in Galway. We would meet either one of them teams maybe in a semi-final or a quarter-final and go down by a couple of points. So we kind of knew that we were competitive, but we just couldn't get over the line. They were very strong at the time. And then for us to finally make that breakthrough in 2003, it was such a relief, I suppose, and it was such a reward for all the hard work that was going on in Portumna. I was especially happy for the older players on the panel that had, you know, struggled on through the 90s and coming up against great teams and not getting over the line. And for them guys, some of them were playing, some of them were subs on that team. For all them guys to pick up a county middle with Portumna was just an unbelievable achievement. And I think all the young guys that came into that team, you know, we really had an appreciation for the older brigade that had soldiered for so long without having any success. So for me, 2003 was a huge breakthrough for Portumna and a county final win that I'll never forget.
Obviously, winning that was special. Generally, it's expected that Galway teams go on to win All-Ireland. Dunleavy, very experienced Dunleavy team, catching the All-Ireland semi-final, you know, the following February.
Yeah, like it was all, I mean, after winning that county final, it was a brand new experience for us. We went back training in January, which we hadn't probably done before. We had to find, you know, pitches with floodlights, you know, for us to train during the winter. So it was a brand new experience and a steep learning curve for us. But, you know, we played Dunleavy, I think, up in Clonus that year, and, you know, very strong team, backboned by a number of Antrim players. And they were just too good for us on the day. You know, we battled hard, but lost out in the end. But really kind of steep learning curve for us, Brian, and something I think we learned from when we went back, when we did get back to that stage again. We probably learned some lessons that year that we took forward. Just not good enough, maybe a bit of inexperience on the day, but probably made a bit easier because we had made that breakthrough with the county final win. And that was probably a bit easier to take. That loss was a bit easier to take, knowing that we had finally won a county cup.
One of the funny things about you playing in All-Ireland is you ended up playing Burr in the 2008 All-Ireland. And as you said, you needed to go and get pitches with lights. But so too did Burr, and you ended up both training on the one field on alternative lights in Ballingarry.
Yeah, we used to go. Ballingarry wouldn't have been far, as people might know. Portumna is on the border. We're just across the bridge from Tipperary in Lura, and Ballingarry is just over across the way as well. So we're only like 20-25 minutes from Borough, really. So it's very, very close. So yeah, we used to use, and in fairness, we were very thankful to them, the grounds that had the lights set up back then. You know, it's obviously the facilities have been improving everywhere across the country since, but there wasn't that many pitches back then that had good floodlit lights that you could go down there at 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening and have a good training session. So yeah, it was a funny one, and we knew a lot of them Borough guys. We had played Borough on a number of occasions, you know, with challenge games and stuff like that down through the years. But for us to meet them in that game, it was a big one really for that area, because we weren't that far apart at all.
In terms of some of the managers that you've played under, you know, there's names that spring to mind, obviously like Matty Murphy, Noel Lane, and some great hurling men. But who would you rate as the best manager you ever played under?
Yeah, look at it. When you have a long career, Brian, you play under a lot of people. But I think for me, I don't want to mention a lot of people, because then you leave out someone and you'll be disappointed. But I think Noel Lane, when he came in with the Galway team in 2001, 2002, he was over the team that time. We got to the final in 2001 and Tipperary beat us, and then Clare beat us by 1 point the following year. But Noel came in there with a team of John Connolly, who we all know, and he brought Mike McNamara in. And Mike McNamara was the physical trainer with Clare when they won the All-Irelands back in the day. You know, a great motivator, a great physical trainer. He had us in great shape. Noel Lane was a manager, I suppose, that probably came in and was thinking about the players maybe outside of the hurling pitch. He did. I remember him bringing in photocopies of chapters from a sports psychology book, and he'd hand out the photocopies in the training, in the dressing room, and he'd say, guys, read that now this week and I'll have another chapter for you next week. And this, for me anyway, was pretty new. Of course, now it's common practice that you would actually have a sports psychologist with the team. But back then, I just felt that Noel was probably a bit ahead of his time. You know, was a really good player manager, man manager, and he had a good team around him. We were disappointed, I think, in 2002 when the county board, you know, when another management team came in 2002, because definitely I think Noel Lane and his team had more to offer. I think, you know, after close loss to Tipperary in the 2001 final, and James O'Connor got a great point for Clare to beat us by 1 point, I think, in 2002. So they definitely had something else to offer. And for me, Noel was kind of he had a new way of looking at things back then. And he brought things into our training sessions that we only seen coming in then years later. So a manager I felt was ahead of his time and probably should have got more time with that Galway team, I think, back in the early 2000s.
Obviously, you lost the All-Ireland in 2005 as well. You kind of referenced the fact that, you know, 0-1, the game was there to be won. 0-5, how did you feel that went against Cork?
I think 0-5 was probably a bit different. I think that Cork team were very good. You know, looking back on it now, I just feel, yeah, did we think we could take them coming into the final? Yeah, we could. But I just think their confidence was maybe a bit better than ours. They had a very solid team, very solid half-back line. Gerbert O'Sullivan at full-back. You know, that team had been around for a while. And for me, I think if you're looking at 2001 and 2005, I think we had a better chance in 2001. I just think Cork were just too good for us on the day in 2005, and I think they were deserving winners that day. I just feel, looking back, you know, they just had that bit of a confidence or that bit of a swagger after their previous win. They probably deserved to beat us in 2005. But as I said, 2001, I think that was a missed opportunity for us.
Did this surprise you by going with long puckouts, considering you probably would have been anticipating that it would have been a lot of shorter puckouts or a lot of movement maybe in their puckouts with Donlow, Cusack, you know, obviously running things from the goal, but they tended to go route one a lot.
Yeah, I think on the day itself, personally speaking, you know, I wasn't really surprised. I mean, as a player, I think you just have to deal with whatever's in front of your face. And the thing is, you just adapt as you see fit. So if you're on a guy, you're just chasing him for the day. And if the puck outs are coming along, you're dealing with that. If they're going short, you deal with that. They probably had, you know, adjusted slightly for that day. But for me, in the full back line, I didn't notice anything majorly different, Brian, to be honest with you. But I do know that Cork had a number of very good players, you know, at that time. And there was always going to be a battle. And we just couldn't get to their pace on the day, I think.
Galway obviously represented Connacht in the Railway Cup final. There may be a couple of players thrown in the odd time, one from Roscommon or Sligo. you know, do you think, like, did that kind of help you as a team? And how did you enjoy the kind of Railway Cup competitions anyway?
Look, they were another kind of, I suppose, from Galway's point of view, yes, you would have a few players from Roscommon, a few players from maybe Sligo, you know, maybe later years, a few, you know, not Guy from Mayo, but from a Galway point of view, I suppose, it was nearly like, you know, a practice, you know, getting together for a training session for the Galway team. I think they lost, you know, they were huge days in the calendar when you go back through the years. But I think, you know, the interest definitely waned when I was playing the Railway Cup. And inevitably, it would be kind of, you know, heavy going, heavy weather. And for us, you know, personally speaking, yes, you went out and fulfilled the fixtures, but I think they carried more importance, I think, maybe back in the 80s and 90s. I think they definitely lost something, you know, when I was playing, when I was involved with them anyway. Yes, you played the game, but it was practically a Galway team that you were playing with, so Galway would have used it as a kind of a preparation for the upcoming league or championship.
It's interesting you say that, because a lot of Leinster players and Munster players, and obviously I know from experience from talking to players, it was still a huge honour to be picked on those teams. Whereas obviously for ye, it was almost a labour of love. It was just an extension to the Galway panel.
Yeah, I think so. And I think from Munster and Leinster, you're obviously picking from, you know, four Munster, you're picking from five, you know, very solid teams, and Leinster the same way. You have a number of teams to pick from. So for them guys, I suppose it probably was a bigger honour. Up in Connacht, you know, it was the majority of the Galway panel, with a couple of additions to that. So for us, it probably wasn't the same recognition or the same honour that the Leinster and Munster guys would feel about it. And you can see that point as well. You know, to make a Munster team or to make a Leinster team, you're playing with the best players from the counties, and that obviously is a great honour to be selected on that, on the Munster or Leinster teams.
You didn't say no when you got the trips to Rome and Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, we got a few good trips, in fairness, in the later years. That was always a nice advantage. And I think, you know, when them trips were there, it probably definitely, the Munster and Leinster boys would probably be making themselves available for that as well, once people knew there was a trip involved. But yeah, that was a nice perk. But I think they have to do something to get the interest back into it, because I definitely think the interest dropped off. And they were nice trips, and they were actually a nice chance for players to have a chat and to have a beer together after the game. And probably we had the opportunity to talk to different players from different counties that we didn't get before. So from that point of view, it was nice from a hurling point of view, and it was nice from a social point of view as well, that you actually got to mingle with some of the top players from Munster and Leinster, outside of Ireland and outside of the competitive environment that we typically found ourselves in.
Yeah, but even to go on about this, like, say 0-9 in Abu Dhabi, you know, both teams land out, and the Leinster team go on the beer, whereas obviously the Connacht team, because you're more or less the Galway team, you were instructed that you weren't to, because as you said, it's an extension to your inter-county setup, and that wasn't maybe the perceived conduct of the Galway team. Whereas the Leinster team, we were coming from, you know, Offaly, Wexford, Kilkenny, Dublin, whatever, and it was a great chance for us to cut loose.
Yeah, it probably was. And I mean, look, you would have had a manager maybe trying to instruct you what to do, but I mean, it was probably a manager from some other county, whereas we would have had the Galway manager with us out there. So if they wanted to treat that like maybe treat it as a training weekend or something like that, That might have been the case, but I'm sure we had a few beers after the game. Brian, we didn't. I don't think we left Rome without having a few beers over there.
No, no, that's for sure. Have you any regrets about your hurling career, Ollie?
I think, Brian, you know, you look back on your career and sometimes it's only when after you finish kind of playing with Galway and stuff like that, that you look back and you say, you know, you reflect maybe. And, you know, one thing for me, I suppose, was I didn't at the time realise maybe how selfish you need to be as to play at intercounty level. And definitely, you know, personal relationships or even, you know, friendships may have suffered over the years because you're just very, very dedicated to the cause. And, you know, there's times there, there's weekends or weddings you can't go to. You know, I had to leave my own brother's wedding early, you know, because we were playing the following day. So there's small things like that that you reflect on. You know, not winning in All-Ireland, I think a lot of people would ask me that question. But would I have a regret about that? You know, not really. I mean, as I said earlier, if we were good enough, we would have probably won in All-Ireland. And we just maybe weren't good enough to win one. So from that point of view, you know, would I have liked to win in All-Ireland? Yes, for sure. But do I kind of reflect on it? And am I sad or very, very disappointed? No, I'm not. I think, you know, I had a really decent career. I was injury free for most of it. And I'm just very, very thankful for my hurling career. And some people, I suppose, look at it, is your cup half empty or half full? And I'm probably definitely the type of, I like to look at it, it's half full. And that's probably the way I look back at my career.
You're now a business development manager with the Kirby Group. You've worked your way up. But, you know, maybe in your early years, did hurling influence your career pathway?
It probably did, Brian, at times. I mean, there was probably times in your career where you look and you maybe, you know, you choose a job or a route where it keeps you closer to home. It doesn't affect you. You don't have to travel for work, et cetera, et cetera. And definitely, you know, I've changed jobs a couple of times in my career. And sometimes, yes, there was definitely an influence from my hurling, because you just couldn't, you know, forget about hurling. And I knew I had to be in Athenry every Tuesday and every Thursday evening, and then you were training the weekends as well when I was training with Galway. So did I make decisions during my career? Yes, I did. You know, and sometimes then you get out the end, you get out in your 30s or in your 30s, and you look back in your 20s when some people that started working with you have maybe climbed the ladder in different organisations, and you find that you're maybe a bit behind. So for me, I suppose the GPA have done a lot for that in the last 10 or 15 years. I think players are way more conscious now of preparing themselves for when they retire from the game. And the thing is, like, some players have to retire early due to injury and stuff like that. And they do find themselves that they've maybe not concentrated on their career, and find themselves maybe 5 or 6 years behind other people the same age as them. So for me, yeah, I definitely made decisions. I was lucky though, Brian. I had, you know, any bosses I had at the time, they always, you know, were accommodating. If you needed to get off a bit early some days to maybe get to physio somewhere or something like that, I never had any trouble really from bosses I had down through the years. So I'm thankful for that as well. But the advice I give to players, I suppose, is, you know, you always have to think forward and see where you want to be when you're coming to the end of your career. And wherever that is, you need to start putting things in place now and start working towards that. Don't just leave it all till you're 30 years of age and, you know, your career is over, your sporting career is over, and you're way behind, because that's not a nice place to be for anybody. But with the help of the GPA, Brian, I think that's improved a lot over the last 10 years.
Since you retired, obviously, and you've gone into analysis for Sky Sports since they've become involved in the GA, and you're obviously one of the hurling analysts. How do you find that?
I enjoy it, Brian. I mean, it's not like it's, I know you're there for the majority of the day, but it's good fun. It's you're talking about something that you're interested in, and you're following the games anyway. So, you know, yes, you have to do a bit of research and you have to find out if there's new players coming on the scene, where are these guys coming from? You know, where did they play college hurling? You know, where did they play with their club? Yeah, there's certain players coming on the scene now that you wouldn't be familiar with, you know, because they're only starting out. But, you know, when you're retired, like, there's players, you know, still hurling that I hurled with. and hurled against before I retired back in 2010. So it's very, very, I find it very interesting. I like that side of the game. I like the analysis. I like the team setups. You know, I like the behind the scenes thing. You know, coming up to a game, you're always wondering who's going to pick up who, the man marking, the positional switches. Our team's going to play with a sweeper, which we've seen coming in more and more over the years. So all that aspect, I'm very, very interested in. And again, you're just trying to maybe highlight to the viewers, you know, something that you pick up, whether it's a piece of defending or, you know, a forward that, you know, does something before the ball even comes to him. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I like to highlight to the viewers that maybe they've missed. And oftentimes, a lot of stuff can go on, you know, in the lead up to a goal or in the lead up to a great tackle that sometimes people don't necessarily see. And that's very interesting for me.
Yeah. You tried to do me over goal. First ever game on Sky Sports, Kilkenny murder us in Offaly, beat us by 26 or 28 points or something. And I was lucky enough to score a goal, but I got it by kicking it. And I switched hands and I didn't even realize I switched hands. I caught the ball in my right hand and switched to my left and kicked it in my left foot. And what does the bowl Ali Cunning do? Only in his analysis said, that should have been a free out.
And Brian, did you switch hands?
Thanks, Ali.
Did you though? Did you switch hands? Exactly. So again, there's small things that happen in games like that people would not, you know, that happens. And, you know, it looks from the outset, yeah, perfect. Now, I know it's hard for referees and all to pick up that. But Brian, serious, I wouldn't have denied you the goal in fairness, but you did switch hands, which is against the rules, you know.
You're right, and that's it.
But you got the goal, didn't you, Brian? So that's the way.
Ah, we got it. Well, Jesus, it wasn't even a consolation, it was that bad.
You weren't the only ones that had a tough day against Kilkenny, I'll tell you that.
That's for sure. You also have the family hurl business. You know, the Canning hurl now is synonymous with, you know, the hurley business across the country. You must be proud of that.
Yeah, we are. We're very proud of it. I mean, we set the business up in 2010. You know, we were making our own hurleys, Brian, in the lead up to that, and the lead up to kind of actually putting some shape on this. And, you know, we often got asked, you know, who made your hurley? And we'd say, we made it ourselves, but we would only have some basic tools at home in the workshop. So like it wasn't like set up for manufacture and like that. But we used it. I remember, I know for example, the first, I think when Joe came on the scene with Portumna back in 2004, the hurley he was using in that championship, he made that hurley himself, you know, and he was only probably maybe 15 or 16 at the time. So he was doing that himself even way back then. So, you know, people would have asked us, you know, to make hurleys for them on a small scale, you know, a couple of guys that we knew, a couple of friends of ours. So we just sat down in 2010 and we said, you know, do you want to have a go at this? I mean, we think if we can sort out, you know, the supply of ash, et cetera, we can produce some nice hurleys. Being in the game yourself for so long, and for us, you know, a hurley when you pick it up, you know, what has a nice balance. You know the timber, and for us straight away, and you're probably like this yourself, Brian, when you pick up two different hurleys, you can do it blindfolded. You'll tell straight away which is the nice hurley. And we felt we were able to do that. So we set up in 2010, and thankfully we've been going fine. With a couple of guys employed out there in Portumna, and Ivan, the brother, he runs the workshop out there, and it's going great. Yeah.
Yeah, super. And obviously the Ploughing Championship is one of the big days in the business, and you see hurls all over the place, all the different hurley makers, but you definitely see Canning's there. There's huge queues outside the tent.
Yeah, look, the Ploughing has been really funny in the last couple of years, where you find a lot of kids, you know, they go to the Ploughing now, they get a chance to have a look at different hurley manufacturers. And we've seen kids coming into the Canning stand, the stall there, and they'll have maybe two other hurley makers that they've got as well. And it's a real novelty for kids. And I suppose the Ploughing Championships open up your market to kids from Wexford and from Kilkenny and from Cork and from, you know, Tipperary and from lots of other counties that they would travel to the Ploughing Championships. And they may not necessarily, you know, use Canning Hurleys all year round, but it gives them a chance to test them out and have a look at them and compare them to other Hurley manufacturers. So the ploughing has definitely been a great thing for a lot of Hurley makers, because there's a great market down there, and you know, we don't mind. We see kids coming in and they'll ask, you know, we'll have a look at the Hurley and it'll be some other Hurley manufacturer, but it's great for them just to try out different Hurleys. And as you know, different places have different shapes, and the Galway Hurley is a different shape to the Kilkenny Hurley, and it's different to the Cork Hurley. And so it's interesting. It's interesting for everybody, and it's great for the kids to be able to do that at the ploughing championships.
It's a business that's had to maybe reinvent itself as well. It's not only just, you know, selling hurdles at the moment, you know, there's slitters and grips and many other different kind of aspects to the business now. And especially now with COVID, you've had to go online. That has probably brought its own challenges as well, has it?
Yeah, it has. And I mean, we really had to kind of jump forward with the online shop at the start of the year. It was something, you know, we were kind of, you know, not really kind of set up for, but not really. But we invested some money into that at the start of the year and kind of got that up to speed. So yes, the online orders are going well. And, you know, during the first lockdown, we actually saw a lot of orders where, you know, it was a kid's Hurley and maybe a 35 or a 36, a tall adult Hurley. And it was definitely, I think, parents, you know, fathers or mothers buying Hurleys, I think, to have a few pucks in the lawn. And we found that online that it was definitely, it brought some people, I think, you know, back using a Hurley that mightn't have been using Hurleys before, because some of the club training was finished. You had a lot of kids around the country. They wanted to go out for a few pucks. And I think they were asking the parents out the back garden to hit some balls. So from that point of view, it's been, yes, it has been a tough year for everybody, I think, Hurley makers included. But look, we're hoping to get back on track next year. And if they can get the club games back again, you know, whenever that happens in the new year, hopefully we'll get back up to capacity again. But it's been a tough year with so many games being called off and, you know, no club games going on at the moment either. So, but look, at everybody's been suffering, Brian, this year with the COVID, the implications of that. And we just have to, like Canning Hurleys is like everybody else. You have to kind of roll with the punches and try and come out the other side and go again next year.
You've first-hand experience of how hurls have changed over the last number of years and probably a move towards a bigger boss and a smaller hurl. You know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I used a 36-inch hurley all my career, and you know, even if you say that to somebody now, they wouldn't believe you, because, you know, I'm only 5'9", and using a 36-inch hurley would appear in today's standards as very, very, a very big hurley. But I always used it, and now you can see the intercounty players, you know, 6'1", 6'2", and they seem to be using 34-inch hurleys and stuff like that,
which
for me seems, and even maybe smaller, I'm not too sure. But definitely the hurley lint has definitely got shorter. But I think in my day at cornerback, definitely the extra couple of inches saved me getting a hook or getting a flick or getting a block or something back in the day. So I wouldn't go back and change the size hurley I used. But definitely, even from selling hurleys, Brian, you know, selling 36-inch hurleys now is few and far between. The sizes have definitely decreased, and it's amazing what the players today can do with hurleys. But you're right, the standard is probably going to be 34, you know, 35 now, and that's probably the way it's going to be going forward.
Aside from hurling, then, Ollie, what else would you have a passion for?
I think, Brian, you know, when you retire from intercounty hurling anyway, you definitely get some time back. And I suppose I kind of drove into my work career, as you said there, a business development manager with Kirby Group, and I cover Ireland for that company. So for me, like, I got really stuck into that. I did some, you know, personal and professional development. I did some, you know, leadership courses, and Kirby, in fairness, they supported anything I wanted to do. I did an international sales diploma. I do think it's never too late to learn new things. So I'm interested in that. I'm interested, I suppose, in the transferring the team the team culture, the team dynamics from the sports field into the office environment or into a corporate environment, that always fascinates me, of how people react in different situations, in pressure situations. And I find it very interesting to see why people make decisions or why people do things they do. And it's a bit like on the sports field, you know, when the pressure comes on, you know, people can do uncharacteristic things. And I find that I always keep an open mind to that. I've also taken up a bit of golf this year, so maybe the golf bug will bite me and I'll get more into that. But I probably haven't played enough of golf yet, Brian, to see whether I have a passion for that or not yet, but time will tell. I just want to get, I suppose, good enough that I can get around the course without embarrassing myself. But probably a game that I want to put a bit more time into as time goes on.
Moving on then, probably to the hardest question of the whole podcast. And I'm going to ask you who the best six players you ever hurled with. And as always, it's one from each line of the field. So we'll start with your goalkeeper, Ollie.
Yeah, I think, you know, thinking about this, and in fairness, you asked me to think about this before we came on, just to get me thoughts around this, because having played with so many players, you're nearly half afraid to leave out someone that's obvious, you know. But for me, I suppose, in goals, Colm Cannon, who was the Galway goalie for a number of years when I was there. Now, Ivan, the brother, will probably... won't be happy with me here, because I would have played with Ivan, in front of Ivan, for years with Portumna, you know, with many, many successful teams. But for me, I suppose, Colm Cannon, and there was one standout save I think he made, and he saved my bacon in 2010. We played Wexford in Nolan Park, and I think it was Rory Jacob that broke a ball. I think Shane Kavanagh went up and it came out of Shane's hand, and Rory Jacob got onto it. Now, I had just kind of stalled, or, you know, stopped when the ball was breaking between the fullback and full forward. But Rory took a gamble and ran inside, and he controlled it beautifully. But he took a shot, Brian, from literally the edge of the small square. And to this day, I have no idea how Colm Cannon saved it, but it was one of the best saves I've ever seen in my life. And for him, kind of covering my arse at the same time was extra pleasing for me. But definitely Colm Cannon, I've seen him, you know, even doing it, you know, up to only a couple of years ago, he was still pulling off unbelievable saves. So for me, I think he's one of the best goalies I've ever played with.
In the full back line then?
The full back line, look, I've played with lots of people there. I think one guy that kind of, you know, pops into your head whenever you think about full back line players in my career, and that's Eugene McEntee from Portumna. You know, myself and Eugene, you know, soldiered together for many a year in Portumna. And as anybody knows, Eugene is a larger than life attitude, and no man was ever big or no man was ever, you know, too good for Eugene to take on when we were playing club or even county with Galway. So Eugene McEntee was a guy that could motivate you, and you know, had massive confidence in himself and in the team, and you kind of just, you know, you fed off that. And he was just a great guy and a good buddy of mine. But when Eugene was beside you, you know, he was really excellent at what he did. A brilliant fullback, and would have played together for all the years of Portumna.
On the halfback line then?
I'm going to stick with the Portumna again, and I don't want to make this boring, but Sean Tracy I picked in the half-back line. I think Sean would have played at number six with Portumna for many a year, and when I broke into the Portumna team as a young lad at 16, and which you can't play senior anymore at 16, Brian, but a lot of us did it. So when I broke into that Portumna team, Sean Tracy was leading the charge with Portumna for many a year during the 90s, and great, great man. Two All-Stars, you know, in 1998 and 1991. And for me, Sean was a huge player to look up to in Portumna. And, you know, when he lined out with Galway as well, we followed Sean's career when we were young growing up. And then to play with him on that Portumna team, Sean would always look after you. And a great, great, great guy. And, you know, when he was playing with Portumna that time in the half-back line, it was hard to get around Sean. And great hurler, shown by his two All-Stars.
Middle of the field.
I'm going to probably bend the rules a little bit here. And another player I was very, very lucky to play with when I came onto the Galway scene in 1995, when I came on there, Joe Cooney was obviously playing at the time. And I think Joe retired in 2000. So there was a number of years I was lucky enough to tug out in the same dressing room as Joe Cooney and probably learn from him. And, you know, Joe probably did stuff with Galway down through the years, and especially in training with Galway when I was young. Joe did stuff on the training ground that day that he probably didn't even appreciate himself. He was just so good, and he could make the ball talk. And one of the, you know, when you look at some of the most skillful players that you have in today's game, I think Joe Cooney had that skill as well. He had the touches, he had the flicks. You know, he'd flick the ball into his hand off the ground. You know, his vision, he could see things happening. And I learned a lot from Joe Cooney, even though Joe probably maybe didn't even realise it at the time. But always a good guy for, you know, a quiet word as well, you know, just to encourage you when you come into that Galway setup at the start. So for me, I was privileged to be on the Galway panel when Joe Cooney was still playing. And I really, really enjoyed the couple of years I had in the dressing room with him.
Moving into the forward line now, and this doesn't get any easier for you. Half forwards?
I'm going to go with Joe here, the brother. I think he is just, one of the best I've ever seen anyway. And he is talked about as one of the best players around at the moment. So for me, he has to be in the six players that I pick. We could see it from when Joe was maybe 10 years old, I'd say, at home. And we could see that in his potential. And, you know, I'm 12 years older than Joe. So I was lucky enough, you know, to play with Portumna for years. But I got a few years with Galway with him as well. And we could see him even at a very, very young age, Brian. You know, we knew he had the potential to be very, very good. And I'm delighted that he went on to fulfill that potential, because sometimes you can see players that just, they just don't make it for one reason or another. But Joe would have to be in my team in the half hour line.
Did you ever feel you had to help him or guide him along? Because a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, a huge amount of pressure. And, you know, sometimes I feel sorry. I've often felt sorry for him that he has carried, a lot of expectation for a lot of years. If he needs advice, you know what I mean, we're always here to have a chat with him. I probably maybe did offer some advice along the way, nothing that really stands out in my head now at the moment. But I think, you know, we had lots of years with Portumna, and just from being, you know, Galway training, Portumna training, just even from team talks and all the rest, you know, he's been taking all that stuff in over the years, as we all have. And you know not only have the older players given maybe Joe advice coming along, he's often given us advice as well, you know, and that's the way teams should work. So delighted in 2017 that Galway made the breakthrough and won that All-Ireland, and Joe was part of that, and he played his part in making that victory happen. So we're all very, very proud of him, and I couldn't leave him off these six players anyway.
That's for sure. So far you've picked Colm Callan, Eugene McEntee, Sean Tracy, Joe Cooney, and your brother Joe Canning. Needless to say, and obviously so, it's Portumna dominated. Who makes up your six?
And I'm going to go with Portumna again here, because, and I'm trying not to be biased here, but this guy has done it for Portumna, but he's also done it for Galway, and that's Damien Hayes. I mean, Damien is, you know, 15-year career with Galway. You know, held the most appearance record there for a while. I think he held the top goal scorer record, 3 All-Stars. Damien has done it all. No better man to get a chance and stick a ball in the top corner. So for me, Damien Hayes has done it all. Great drive. And Damien is a born winner. And that comes out in his hurling, and it comes out when we're chatting at training or Portumna team talks or whatever it is. I mean, you just know that Damien's a winner, and he's had some career. So again, I know he's from Portumna, but he has done it for Galway in the full forward line, you know, probably more than most in during his career. So for me, Damien Hayes gets into the full forward line.
Fantastic six, to be fair. Before you go, Ali, we'll just finish with the quickfire round. Who is the best player in the game currently?
Currently, right now, I think Garrod Hegarty, I think, is having a great year for Limerick. And I suppose we can't forget Tony Kelly. You know, Tony's performances with Clare over the last 3 days has been exceptional.
Pick one.
Tony Kelly.
Who is the best player you ever played against? And you don't have to have marked him.
Best player I've ever played against, and I'd say probably, I think Henry Shefflin would probably have to go up there. I mean, and I never really marked Henry, you know, one-on-one, to be fair. Even though we played, you know, the club teams, we met a few times. I never actually came up against Henry directly. But for me, I suppose Henry is one of the best around, and a go-to guy for Kilkenny for so long, and he's got the records and the awards to prove it.
I know your answer to the next one, and you've even got me to lapse into it with a bit of misconcentration. Is it a hurl or a hurley?
For me, it's a hurley anyway. I think, you know, it's just it's different parts, but it is. We call it canning hurleys. So for me, it's a hurley.
Brilliant. Hoops on your hurl or no hoops?
No hoops on my hurley, unless I find that the hurley needs a bit of weight. If it needs a bit of weight, hoops. But if the hurley is the right weight for me, no hoops.
Perfect. What colour grip did you use?
I used a blue a lot, I think. It was kind of a, I don't know, it's not a navy, you know, it's kind of a royal blue. And I used to like that colour on my hurleys.
By the way, was it your hurl that went missing before the All-Ireland, or... Is that you, no?
Yeah, a hurley of mine went missing at a press night in Galway one night. And, you know, I was asking the guys after. I said, lads, did I even see me hurley? It was on the sideline there. And then there was a good crowd there in Pearce Stadium that night. And nobody had seen it. So the hurley didn't turn up. So obviously somebody had lifted the hurley. Well, that's all right. But Sean Welsh was there from Galway Bay FM. Because it was, I think it was the media night. So I just said, grand. So Sean said, did you lose your hurley? And I said, yeah. I said, fuck. I said, someone's after taking it, you know? And he goes, that's terrible. And I didn't pass any more remarks on that. I asked the panel, the guys inside the room, in the dressing room, I said, lads, anyone see me hurley? And next thing anyway, there was next morning on the sports, on the sports bulletin, Sean Welsh, I think, put on the sports bulletin on Galway Bay FM, whoever took Ollie Canning's hurley, could they please return it before the match? And I didn't know anything about this at all, but Sean Welsh, I think, put it on Galway Bay that I was looking for my hurley. So that was a bit of a story, all right. But listen, I got
over it. Did you get it back?
No, I've never seen it since, and I just got a new hurley. There was no problem. But Sean Welsh, in fairness, probably thought he was doing me a favour. But then all the guys kind of took the piss a little bit, saying, "Oh, geez, Canning, did you not find your hurley yet?" So that was it. Yeah. So my hurley, someone picked up my hurley and made off with it.
Was it your number one?
It actually was, Brian, and I was a little bit disappointed when it went. To be fair, but look, you have to move on. But it was funny when Sean Welsh put it on Galway Bay the next day, and it made a bit of headlines, all right. But that was it. It kind of blew over after a few days. So you just have to get on with it when it doesn't come back, you know. But it was, yeah, it was my number one hurley, which I'm sure you appreciate, Brian. When you have a nice hurley, whatever about breaking it, you don't want somebody to take it on you, you know.
I actually had a hurl and a helmet robbed after we won the Colleges All-Ireland McKearns back in 2000. So I feel your pain.
That's worse than me, so yeah.
Oh, when you're 17, I tell you, it's a big thing losing a Cooper helmet.
Yeah.
Adidas World Cups or Puma Kings?
Puma Kings.
What was it about them?
I think they used to fit me better. I never really could get used to the Adidas, to be honest with you. And the Puma Kings used to have a lovely, they had a lovely summer boot. It was a multi-cog, and the cogs were a little bit longer. The standard multi-cog. They were beautiful boots, and they were just perfect, because even if you got a shower of rain, the cogs were still long enough that it wasn't going to cause you much trouble. And being in the full back line, I was always very conscious of my footwear, because as you know, Brian, back there, one slip from a cornerback or a full back and the corner forward can get in for a score. So Puma Kings, and they had a really nice summer boot with longer molded cogs, we call them, you know.
Yeah. Sweeper or no sweeper?
For me, as a cornerback, sweeper. for hurling in general, no sweeper.
Never needed a sweeper.
I prefer to see it one-on-one, you know what I mean? Everyone going to battle. I just think myself, the sweeper, it's like a comfort blanket there for some of the defenders. And I think maybe the art of defending is maybe, you know, maybe losing out because some teams are using a sweeper, because it definitely is easier to play with a sweeper. It's a lot easier if you're in the full back line and all you know is you have to just knock the ball out to the spare man. That's a lot easier problem to solve than knocking a ball down and then having to fight like a dog for the ball on the ground with your man 50-50. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an easier game to play if there's an extra man there in front of you, because all you just, it makes your job so much easier as a defender. So for me, I think for the game of hurling, not really gone on the sweeper, but if you asked me to go in corner back now, I'd be insisting on a sweeper every day.
O'Neill's or Cummins All-Star Slitters?
Probably the Cummins All-Stars, I think, were the rims were a bit nicer. I think O'Neill's, sometimes you get the ball and the rim would be just that little bit extra on them. So for me, the Cummins All-Star was always a really nice ball with a lower rim. Lovely ball to play with.
And last,
the Canning Slitters are nice now as well.
Ah, lovely. I was wondering where it was coming. You finally copped on.
The rim is not big. The rim is not big. They're nice.
Oh, yeah, of course. Finally, last but not least, Croke Park or Turles?
Croke Park, I think. I just think I've had some tough days in Croke Park as well, but I think we've had some tough days in Turles as well, with Galway down through the years. So for me, I think Croke Park was, you know, you just associate Croke Park with All-Ireland semi-finals, All-Ireland finals. It really is, for me. Tipperary people might think that Turles is the home of hurling, which it is to a certain degree. But for me, like when you think about All-Ireland final day, Croke Park comes into your mind, you know. So for me, Croke Park is first, and Turles probably is second.
Ollie Canning, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Millie Brian.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is sponsored by Golan Bake. And remember, Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in any supermarket to bake at home. If you haven't already, can you please subscribe to A Hurler's Life? We're on Twitter @AHurlersLife, Instagram @AHurlersLife, or you can email me at ahurlerslife@gmail.com.